Hi, everybody. My name is Cassandra, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Cassandra.
And first of all, I'd like to thank Tri-County for inviting me here to speak tonight. I always try to do service work when I come to a convention, and I was hoping that I'd get to do something like be on the Hug Squad or work in registration or something like that. And you know, God does what he wants with us sometimes, and all you have to do is just be willing. And I called this girl that had asked me, and I couldn't get through to her because she wanted me to secretary a meeting. I couldn't get through to her, so I called this other guy named Jim, and he's like, well, I want you to either share on the 10th step, or I want you to be a secretary. And, of course, I wanted to say I'll be a secretary, but I said, well, which one do you want me to do? So he said, do the 10th step. And I'm like, okay. And the thing that is so interesting about it is that I was stuck on the 10th step for a long time. You know, in fact, I just barely got through it not too long ago. So, you know, that's just proof one more time that God is working in my life. You know, because this is a very important step for me. I can see, you know, as you go through that process that they talk about, that you come to a certain point in your recovery, and if you don't move on, you get stuck. And then you can go all the way back, you know, and out the door. And so I know that my higher power's there, and he's helping me do the things that I need to do. He does for me what I can't do for myself. Another thing about the Tri-County area is when I got clean, I lived there for 7 years. The treatment facility that I came out of was Shoemaker in Baltimore. I was there for 30 days, and they wanted to know, was I ready to go home? And I'm like, no, I can't go home because my husband's still using, you know. So if I go back home, I'll probably be right back where I started. So they put me in this vehicle, and we drove for quite a bit of time. And we ended up in Lexington Park. And I don't know if you all know where that is. I didn't know where it was. And I was in this halfway house for, I was supposed to be there for 6 months, but I got put out after about 2 months, and I ended up in a shelter, but I stayed clean, and I ended up staying there for 7 years and went to college and did all the things I was supposed to do. And then finally, after about 7 years, I'm like, well, I think I can go back to D.C. now. So I came back home, and fortunately I did, because I had grandkids and children here. And I have a mother who's now 81 years old. So today I'm capable of being a responsible child and grandmother. Mother, I mean, I'm not like 100% capable, but I'm getting better. And the funny thing, you know, I judge myself in unusual ways because, you know, sometimes other people can see things about me better than I can. But I was just thinking, I had to laugh just now because I said, well, you know, I've been coming here, this is like my 14th year coming here. My clean date is October 10th, 1989. But when I first came here, I think I had about 5 suitcases for just 3 days, okay? And this time I only have 1 suitcase, so to me that means I'm getting better. But as you all know, the 10th step is continue to take personal inventory, and when I was wrong, promptly admitted it. And that to me is also proof that I'm getting better, because to stand up here and talk to anybody about me being wrong, you know, that is quite an accomplishment. And, you know, it's a good thing that it's the 10th step, because I'm sure that most of us wouldn't be even willing to consider something like that unless we had taken 1, 2, 3 and on down the line. Because, you know, after you do work the steps thoroughly and you come to this point, you have a certain amount of self-awareness about yourself, you know, and you are pretty much aware of your character defects, even though sometimes you don't want to look, you know how you're looking this way, you don't want to look that way because you don't want to see them. But after you've been around a few 24 hours, you kind of are familiar with what your character defects are. And one of the things that I learned since I've been in recovery that there's something called peripheral awareness. And peripheral awareness is being aware of oneself and everyone else. And, you know, it's kind of like when you offer drugs, things kind of just come at you like this, you know. I mean, you see yourself and you see other people, you know, like people you're in a relationship with and you don't want to really see how they are, but you are seeing how they are. And things like that come about after you're around through 24 hours. And so, for me, you know, it's amazing how, you know, everything was wrong with everybody at one point. And when I first came around in the treatment program I was in, one of our sayings was, sooner or later it's your fault. People always want to put the blame on everyone but themselves. And that was so true, you know, but even when I think back on some of the things that happened to me as a child, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit, you know, I used to talk about how I was a victim of sexual abuse. But since I've been here a few 24 hours, I'm a survivor of sexual abuse. And sooner or later, it's your fault. People always want to put the blame on everyone but themselves. So I truly believe that this is what this step is all about. When I think about this step, it reminds me of my father. My father was a very brilliant person. He was also an alcoholic and a gambler. He had a double dose. And he married my mother. My mother was from the country. She wasn't very well educated. And the problem began when my mother decided she wanted to get an education. And so everybody in that house suffered. If my mother wasn't around, I was the only girl. I had four brothers. So he misplaced a lot of his anger on me. And so, you know, working this step, it makes me think about how it must be for someone else when I misplace my anger on them. You know, and I'm sure that we all do that, even when we're not aware of it. But I think about how I used to feel when my mother wasn't around, you know, she decided she wanted to go back to school and get an education. Or she was kind of young, she wanted to hang out with her girlfriends, and I was home. And so I caught the brunt of his anger a lot of times. And a lot of times when we catch the brunt of someone else's anger, there's a saying for that too. It says, hurt people hurt people. You know, and because my father hurt me, after a while, I decided, well, the world owes me something, so I'm going to hurt some more people. You know, and it just went on and on and got to be a vicious cycle. I had to write a few notes because I have a problem with memory. And if I didn't write stuff down, I might get stuck in the middle of a conversation and didn't know where I left off. So I have a few notes here. If you see me flipping the page, that's what I'm doing. But thinking back, I remember that I used to smoke marijuana. And I remember people used to say, that's a gateway drug. And I'm like, what are you talking about, gateway drug? This stuff should be legal, you know? And I just loved it, and I would just laugh and laugh and laugh. And after a while, I didn't even know what I was laughing about. And I would laugh because of that, you know? And my father would be at the racetrack, and me and my brothers would have people down the basement be playing the music and put on the colored lights and everything. And my mother would be coming downstairs like, what's wrong with y'all? This music's been playing over and over and over and over again, and everybody's down here asleep. She didn't know what was going on. But one night my father decided to come home early from the racetrack because he had lost all his money, and he blew it for us. He said, they down here smoking that, what they call it, something else then. Was marijuana to me, but they call it something else. But anyhow, so I said, well, I'm gonna get them back for this. So I decided I was gonna make some brownies and some spaghetti and meatballs, and of course I sprinkled a little marijuana on it, and I gave it to them. So I would, you know, always take pride in the fact that they accused me of smoking marijuana, but they ate marijuana. So that was the beginning of my resentments and you know, pushing my resentments off on people. When they did stuff to me, I was going to do something back to them. And little did I know that, you know, that was starting off a lifetime of trying to pay people back for things that they did to me. I was also about 9 years old when I all of a sudden started developing into being a woman when I wasn't ready to be a woman. And I remember one time we used to go to this movie theater. I don't know if y'all are familiar with D.C. We used to go to the Kennedy Theater. And back then you could pay 25 cents to go in the theater. 25 cents, so I'm telling y'all my age. But I don't care because I'm proud of my age, for real. But anyway, I remember going to the movie theater one day and the man looked me up and down. He said, uh-uh. He said, if you want to get in here for 25 cents, you better bring your birth certificate. And I was crushed, you know. I was really crushed about that. But, you know, I mean, I couldn't shrink, you know. So I decided, well, since they think I'm a woman, I'm going to be a woman. I wasn't but 10 years old. So with all the other problems I had, you know, the misplacement of anger from my father and being overdeveloped for my age, you know, I do what we do. You know, I tried to be a woman and did all the things that I thought women did. I remember also that there was a lady that was a role model, so I thought, you know, just to show you my sick thinking, she was my idol. She was an alcoholic. She was petite and she was light-skinned, and she was really nothing like me. And she worked at this nightclub called Jackie Lee's. So I said, when I grow up, I want to be just like her, and I want to work at Jackie Lee's. And you know, when I look at that, that just shows me right back then that I was, my thinking was real sick. Now, how you want to grow up to be a barmaid, you know? So that's what I did. As soon as I graduated from high school, I went up to Jackie Lee's and got a job. Not to mention I was there for only about 2 weeks. By the time I finished dropping glasses and getting confused whose money it was and all that stuff, I wasn't there very long. But anyway, I ended up with a person that had a lot of anger. And I wasn't really able to handle my anger. And I victimized other people with my resentments. I misplaced my anger on other people. And I thought that I was, you know, because the world owed me something, that I was, you know, getting it back from other people. But what I really was doing was hurting myself. You know, my idea of a famous person or somebody that I wanted to be was a call girl. That was my top-notch role in life, was to be a call girl. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, you know, they want this, they gonna pay it, I'm gonna get rich. You know, really, that's the way I was thinking. But down the line, you know, I was still using drugs. Well, I started off drinking, you know, smoking marijuana and drinking. And after a while, the marijuana wasn't working, so I graduated to some other things and some other things and some other things. And it's amazing how you look back on your life and you just see how fast it goes by. You know, I think, well, I've been married more times than I'd like to mention. I've had about 50 or 60 jobs. I was a Muslim and a Rosicrucian and a Baptist and a Catholic, and you know, I was searching every place. I moved every year because I didn't believe in paying the rent, so you know, after I ran out of lies to tell the judge and everybody else, I got put out. So it just came a point in my life where, you know, I had nowhere to go, you know, and no more lies to tell. And, you know, I went through all the drugs I could go through. And I heard somebody say tonight, and it was true for me, is that even though I continued to use because I didn't know any other way to live. You know, it really wasn't doing nothing for me, but it was a lifestyle that I had had for so long until when I got up in the morning, that's the only thing I knew to do. Well, not got up in the morning, but came to in the morning. You know, when I came to in the morning, the only thing I knew to do was go get some more, you know, by any means necessary. And, you know, a lot of times I tell my sponsees, you know, if it's raining or snowing or you don't have no money, you can't get to a meeting, it's like, if you wanted to hit, you could get there, wherever it was and whatever kind of weather. I remember, I can't remember what year it was, but I'm sure you all probably remember, it was like in the 70s. I think it started snowing on a Sunday in the morning, or either Saturday night, and the next morning the snow was like up to here. And I woke up, you know, like I always do, and I looked out the window, and I was like, I wasn't mad because it had snow, I was just mad because it was going to make it a little more difficult for me to go get what I was going to go get. And I went and found some boots and layered my clothes, put about 5 or 6 outfits on, and I walked out of there and got what I needed to get, you know? And so today I kind of think about that when life gets hard, don't have enough money to pay my bills, I don't feel like going to work, I can't find that special person that I'd like to have in my life that I feel like I deserve. You know, and all the poor me things that we want to go through. I remember how I survived before, you know, to, you know, remind myself that this is heaven compared to the way my life was when I got here. When I got here, I was so happy that I could finally come into a place of people where I belonged. Because all my life I also tried to fit in, you know. You know that saying about I wore a mask, 1,000 masks? Well, so did I. Everywhere I went, I had to be a different person so that I could fit in or please somebody, you know, make somebody else happy. And by doing that, I lost myself. When I got here, I didn't even know what I liked. And for a minute, I didn't even really know how old I was because I lied about my age so much, I had forgot really exactly what year I was born. That's the truth. But after a time, you know, we start getting better. Some in some areas fast, you know what I mean? Complexion starts coming back, you gain a little bit of weight. But it takes a pretty amount of time to get this working, you know what I mean? In fact, I still think some of my brain cells are gone forever. And sometimes I think my body's falling apart because a couple of weeks ago, I went to the doctor, I had arthritis in my left hand and tendonitis in my right hand. And when I went to the doctor, he moved my pocketbook on the table so he could check my arm. He said, "Damn, what do you have in this pocketbook, a gun?" And he said, "No wonder you have tendonitis in your hand because your pocketbook weighs 25 pounds, you know? And everything I got in there is important. So what am I going to do?" So anyway, you know, it's one day at a time, you know, sometimes 1 minute at a time. And I'm still learning shit, you know, I'm still learning. I'm learning how to take care of myself. I'm learning to feel comfortable in my own skin. And that's another thing. I always said that I wanted to feel comfortable in my own skin. And working the 10th step, working on myself, taking personal inventory is going to help me to feel comfortable in my own skin. Because if I don't respect you and I don't treat you the way that I want to be treated, I can't go home and lay there at night and sleep comfortably in my own skin. You know, and that's very important to me today. I even remember times when I've been in, you know, verbal altercations with people. And I really felt that I was right. But people have told me that you could kill somebody with your tongue. I have actually almost killed somebody with my tongue. And I used to think that that was a compliment, but today I know that that's not a compliment. And so I was so concerned about what I might have said to that person, even if I thought I was right, that I went back and apologized to them. And I felt better about apologizing. You know, because I know that, you know, and I'm a Christian person, I know when it's time for me to go to meet my maker, I have to answer for what I did. Not what that other person did or said or whatever. But am I comfortable with whatever I said or did myself? You know, a lot of times I use a lot of little sayings that I hear in the fellowship to help keep me in line because, you know, those are things that you can say real fast and help snap you back in order, you know. And I remember this guy that I used to admire said, "You feel the way you feel because you think the way you think." And that's really true because if you think negative things all the time and you're paranoid, you think people are trying to take your man or do this or do that to you, then you're going to act bad. You know, you're going to be nasty and snappy at people and mistreat people. But if you think good about people, you think that people care about you and people love you and that you deserve love and just all the positive things that you can think, then you're going to feel good. And you're going to behave nicely to people. Even negative situations, you know. You could lose your job. And you could think, well, those no good people fired me and this, that, and the other, you know. Or you could think, well, one door's closing and another one's going to open. You know, it's just all about how you want to think about the situation. And most of the time, I'm getting better with it because they also used to say, act as if, act in a certain way until you can condition yourself to be that way. And I believe it was somebody, some great inventor that discovered that doing something, I can't remember who it was, but he said doing something for 90 days in a row becomes a habit. And I think that's part of what's going on here. They tell some of them tell us to do a meeting 90 and 90. And if you do something over and over for 90 days, and that doesn't matter what it is, it becomes a habit. So I'm just so grateful that, you know, sometimes I don't even really have to do too much work on a daily basis. All I have to do is just keep coming back. You know, if I keep coming back, I just get better in spite of myself. You know, because if I keep coming back in these rooms, somebody's going to be here that's going to say something. Or if I need a job, somebody's going to tell me about a job. Or if I need my car fixed, somebody's going to tell me they know somebody. I mean, everything I need is here. And, you know, I read occasionally. I'm not a good reader because I think, well, I was diagnosed as having attention deficit disorder. And I'm really glad that I found out because I can't sit still. After half an hour, I got to go. You know, I don't mean no harm, but sometimes I go to the other fellowship because I can't stand no meeting for an hour and a half. You know, and I get up and walk outside or walk around or whatever. But I'm glad because now I know what's wrong with me. I didn't know what it was. You know, it's like I'll be thinking of something and then next thing you know, I'm thinking about something else. I can't even read because of it. And he put me on some medication for it, and I found out that it was amphetamine, and I didn't want to be on it. So I said, I'm going to try to do something else or do some meditation or try to work with it some other way. But, you know, that's just one of those things that I'm finding out about myself, you know, that that's the reason why I can't keep still. That's why my thinking fluctuates from one thing to another. And so I don't read a lot, but I do try to read the literature as much as I can. And I did a lot of reading on this 10th step, you know, because I knew I had to come in here and talk about it. But it's really, I mean, it speaks for itself, you know, continue to take personal inventory. And when you're wrong, probably admit it. And, you know, it was when I was reading it, it was saying that sometimes we don't even know when we're wrong. You know, and that is, it don't make sense, but it's true. You know, because sometimes we can grow up in an atmosphere of certain things, and we're exposed to certain things, and we just don't know exactly where we were wrong, where the other person was wrong. And so, like I said before, what I do, if I have any doubt about it, I just go ahead and apologize. You know, because I feel better. Even if I wasn't wrong, at least I try to clean things up, you know, and make my amends. So, I just want to say that sooner or later, it's your fault. And people always want to put the blame on everyone else but themselves. And thank you for letting me share.
I'd like to thank Cassandra again for sharing. And our next speaker is Jamila.
Hi, family. I'm Jamila, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Jamila.
And I'm real thankful to my higher power, whom I choose to call God, for one more day of not using and not getting high. And I keep that up front. I thank the Tri-County Program Committee for asking me to come out and share my experience, strength, and hope on the 10th step. I really do thank East of the River and DC area for my foundation. And I truly do thank South Potomac area for raising me and for keeping me. And I'm real grateful for my relationship with my higher power, because that is what really keeps me going outside of the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous. And it's important that I develop a relationship with God of my understanding. I was taught, if I am asked to share on the step, share on the step. So I'm not going to give you a long drug log. I'm sure everybody know how I got here. I could not stop using. And one is too many, and 1,000 is never enough. And I'm real grateful to my process, to the predecessors who really put something on my mind and made it real clear to me. You know, it was either you change or die. You know, wasn't no middle ground. You know, wasn't a whole lot of titty. You know. It was either you change or die, you know, and that the disease is progressive, it's incurable, it's fatal, and it wants my life dead. It wants me dead. And when I think about powerlessness and my inability to stop using on my own and how I tried so many times, you know, geographical cures, you know, making it up in my mind. Eventually, I felt that I was going to be able to stop and stay stopped. And after coming to Narcotics Anonymous and coming to the rooms and coming in here really confused, I had my son with me on my hip, and I seemed to just stumble into this program. And I need to say too, when I'm really tired, because we've been up all night long. We have not slept since we've been here in Ocean City, and I really do thank, you know, God for the sisters that He has graced me with to set an example, because that's what you all have done for me. Is to bring new people to the convention. And we really have been having a ball. And we went to sleep about 3 or 4 o'clock this morning and got up about 5 o'clock, you know, because we did the sun, you know, the early sunrise meeting on the beach. And we've just been up ever since then. But, you know, when I used to come to the conventions early on, they told me, you don't sleep when you come to the conventions. You sleep when you get home. Make all the meetings you can while you're in Ocean City. And so that's what we've been doing. But I'm really thankful for me realizing that I could not stop, I could not stay stopped, and that I needed something greater than my disease. And just going to meetings and going to beginner step meetings and learning about the disease of addiction, that drugs is just a symptom of my problem. And when I kept going to that beginner step meeting, I was just hearing things. You know, I didn't know how to apply it. And I think that's the importance of keep coming back, because I was in a fog. I came in here speedballing. I detoxed in the rooms. They had to tell me to calm down. I was sweating in the rooms. My stomach pained in the rooms. And I'm glad for the people who cared for me and encouraged me to stay. Step meetings are vitally important. The foundation of this program is vitally important. And the only way that I get a foundation is to go to meetings. Don't pick up and pray. And that beginner step meeting, after going there for a while, because it took me a while for the fog to lift, for me to really, really admit and embrace and accept the fact that I was an addict, you know, and that I wasn't going to ever be able to use if I wanted to live a new way of life and a life free from active addiction. And there was no safe way. You know, there was no weekends, there was no birthdays, there was no going to be no special occasions. I really had to get that in my head that I could not use nothing. Clear, point blank, you know. And I kept going to that beginner step meeting, and people encouraged me to do step work. And I did step work because it was suggested. And when I did the step work, it took me about 2 years to write or complete my fourth step, because I had one of those childhood, adolescence, and adulthood four steps. And when I took it to my sponsor to do the fifth step, she said, "I hope you don't think that we're going to go over all that stuff, you know." And so we went over over the fifth step. And what I like about the program is that it gives us a lot of tools to work with. I don't have no excuses for trying to control my disease, the disease of addiction. There's no excuse for it. Every time I think about trying to control my life, not using, I go back to my story and how unmanageable I am when I try to control my life. Doing step work, finding out who I am, carrying this relationship with the God of my understanding that I've developed in the second step, and just moving on to the best of my ability. And things start to unfold, you know. And I was sharing in the meeting the other day how it's important to move on to the next step, you know, to not pause. I cheat myself when I get to a point and I stop or procrastinate, because that's one of my character defects. I get to a point and I stop, like when I go to the gym and I get a curve. You know, my purpose really is to go to the gym and, you know, change a whole lifestyle, you know, and I'm going to incorporate this exercise into my daily living. But as soon as I get a curve, I leave the gym, you know, and could never stay consistent. And so when I looked at, you know, my character defects and how I could start stuff and would run when it was time for me to really do the work to get to the next level, and reading the sixth step saying that we want all of the benefits of what the program has to offer, but don't want to do the labor. And I reflected back on Joan H. telling me, "Jamila, you want something for nothing." And I was like, something for nothing. I came in here with a lot of stuff. What is she talking about? You know. But when y'all said it's an inside job, that y'all didn't care about how much or how little I had, and, you know, who my connections were, what I had done in the past, but only in what I was trying to do about my problem and how you all could help me from the inside out. And so I start to hear some things and start to look at my story and how I needed to make a choice whether I wanted to live or die. You know, what was it that I could do humanly possible to help my own self? And the only thing I needed to do was to be willing to do something different. Because that pattern that I had lived had gotten me ends that were very painful. My inability to accept certain things, you know, not knowing who my father is, played a very deep tear in my soul. And, you know, just being confused. And, you know, what am I supposed to do in I guess, my imagining that kind of relationship? You know, what would it be like? And you know, and so it really, really played deep on me. And it was a void there, you know, a real big void. And doing step work and these things being revealed and me developing a relationship with my higher power has afforded me the opportunity to heal in a lot of areas, and especially in my affairs with others. And when I was using, I had to look at, in recovery, I had to look at my part I played in my affairs and my relations when I was using. Because to me, it was fair game. Everybody was hanging. Everybody was using. You know, whoever got harmed. It was on them, you know. Every man for themselves, you know. And so coming into the program and doing the 8th step and the 9th step and writing that list, you know, I had to write a list of all persons I had harmed and places and institutions and things that had happened to me. I remember being in my apartment. My aunt had co-signed for me an apartment. And she called me and said, you need to pack your stuff because you're getting ready to get put out of there. And I could not understand what was going on. I said, put me out for what? She said, Jamila, you ain't paid rent in 3 months. So why not get put out? So I'm scuffling now, you know. I'm scuffling trying to get all my stuff together because they get ready to come put me out, you know. And so just the unmanageability and me reflecting back on all of the, you know, the spots and situations and my friends dying and getting killed when crack hit the scene, you know. That took me into a depression because a lot of the people that I grew up with got killed on the streets. And when I think back, I realized that it could have been me, because I was hanging with them. And we was in spots, and we were in places. And God saw fit to grace me. And I don't take that lightly. Sometimes I cry about it because of how sorrowful I get when I think about my friends. So I thank God for, you know, healing. I thank Him for my relationship and realizing my parts that I play in my affairs with others. And that was My inability to effectively relate to people was distorted, totally. Family relations, work relations, Narcotics Anonymous relations. You know, I just didn't have the compassion the loving kindness that it takes to really be, you know, in a relationship with somebody because of my control. The control was so overwhelming that I couldn't even see it. You know, they say control is really an illusion. You think that you have it, but you really don't. And it's not until I surrender that I see that I was out of control. And so when I look back on, you know, having 5 years, you know, 6 years in the program and not, you know, having any sponsees, you know, I'm like, what's going on? And I would just run people away, you know, because I didn't know how to let you be who you are. You know, I didn't know how to accept you for who you were, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, you know. And coming into the program and healing from past hurts has really, really, really gotten me to a greater place in my recovery. I believe that relationships are what, to me, this process is all about. And serving others, and being available for others, and not looking for anything in return. When I think about the eighth step that I did, and the amends that I needed to make, and, you know, the toughest ones, you know, like my mother, and my family, you know, and how taking a personal inventory, and how I have to process my thoughts before, I have to process my thoughts so that I don't re-injure them. Because what I'll do is I'll say I did a ninth step and I made the amends, and so that's all that needed to be done. But what I fail to realize is that it's follow-up with that. It's prayer that goes along with the 10th step. It's me looking at my own actions. And what I like about the 8th step is that it says to separate what you did and what was, you know, perhaps done to you. And I get stuck on the harm that was committed to me and forget that I played parts in some of those hurts and harms and things that had happened to me. And so it's important that I just not dismiss it, but focus on my responsibility and what I'm supposed to do to be the best person that I can be. And sometimes I struggle with that. And I definitely struggle with that with my family, because of the resentments and because of the hurt that's still there and because of the continued harm that takes place today. And I have to accept it, and I do, but it's hard for me to continue to keep placing myself in harm's way. And I've had to separate myself. And it's painful, but I'd rather continue to be free from not using than to keep placing myself in harm's way that could jeopardize my recovery. And I have a real tough time with being harmed. I really, really do. I also have a tough time with accepting the fact that I commit harm and how I have to forgive. And I know that that's the key principle in me being able to have relationships with people, is to be able to forgive. So I continue to work on that. And I'm glad that I have the 7th step to always resolve to, ask God to help me when I feel like I should be doing more to make relations better. and how sometimes I'm unwilling, or my willingness is just, it's not always strong. It's just not. So I'm glad in Narcotics Anonymous that, you know, you all understand. That is really an awesome thing, that you all have some of the same issues and problems, and how we could relate to one another. Not sanction it, but at least be able to share and to be able to let you all know that I remember being, when I was a young girl, being told I wasn't going to be shit, and how I had to push myself beyond what I heard. And it's important to me that I get support in this program emotionally. And that's why sometimes it's not a big deal for me to be everywhere or have a whole lot of people. Because it helps me to keep my life simple. I'm still trying to learn how to maintain, or trying to learn how to develop, rather, some emotional balance. And so people who are in my life who are spiritually connected, I gravitate to them. I really, really do. And that's the reason why I'm glad that I'm in the area that I'm in, because nobody's perfect, but I do know that we have love and respect for one another. And that's vitally important to me. It's important to my growth. It's important to my development. It's important to my being able to connect. Because when I got here, I was totally disconnected to myself, to others, to the way I had lived. And just didn't want to live, you know. I was totally disappointed with myself. I had all these high expectations. Things should have turned out another way. And so our theme, and I know that I'm on a 10th step, but Lost Dreams Awaken. I really appreciate the speaker tonight and all that she had to say. And what I'm dealing with right now is that I graduated from college last year in this program, and I'm dealing with an enormous amount of fear. And while you all might see me having the abilities to do certain things, and I do believe in myself, I still beat up on myself a lot, and inadequacies, and so I settle for less than perhaps my potential could carry me. And so I'm still in prayer and asking my higher power to help me to move beyond the fear, so that I'm able to be successful not only in my recovery, but in my personal life and in my work life, and that I don't settle. I've always had a pattern of settling for less. And so I'm glad that, you know, we go through this process of examining ourselves and can always make a choice to do something different. I really do thank God for that. I keep coming back, and I heard the lady share that it's important that people, you know, with time keep coming back. And I often share, too, here lately, that, you know, I have ideas of leaving, you know, NA, and feeling like, you know, I got this thing, you know? And that's the kind of stinking thinking that I have to share, so that I'm not caught up in going out that door thinking that I got this thing. So I don't trick myself like I used to, and I still fall short with coming up with these great ideas and perhaps executing them. But I'm glad that they haven't been as detrimental in recovery as they were when I was using. And so, I really do want to encourage the newcomer that if you don't know why you're here, keep coming back. It might not be clear today, but if you keep coming back, the fog will lift and you will be able to hear something that will perhaps keep you here. The newcomer is the most important person in any meeting. I am not the most important person. And I thank God. Sometimes I could get so morbidly serious that it could be like the end of the world. And my sponsor has to constantly remind me and people in my area, take the foot out your butt, Jamila, you needed to walk on, And just hearing, I'm finally getting to a place where I'm hearing things more. I'm able to receive things a little better than I did when I was a newcomer. And keep coming back is vitally important. It's vitally important. We don't get this thing overnight. And what I mean by that is that our understanding comes slow. And I know for me, because I smoked a lot of boat and crack, I smoked a lot of boat and crack. So, love boat, PCP, if you don't know what love boat is or what boat is, And sometimes when we in business meetings, that's the best time you're able to see yourself. When you get into a relationship or into an environment that causes you to communicate, you see yourself. And sometimes I still be speedballing. I am not kidding. Then I had to say, hold up, Jamila. Remember what they told you when you got here? Calm down. I have to tell myself that even when I'm interacting, I have to give myself those little self-talks and say to myself, do you really need to respond? Does it require you to say anything? Maybe you just need to be quiet. Just shut your mouth, Jamila. And so I go through these little prayers with myself and these little self-talks that really, really, really help me to stay out of trouble with people. I don't have to address everything. That's been a revelation. That I don't have to address everything. Some stuff you could just let it flow, let it go, And it makes my life simpler. It really does. When I realize that I don't have to respond to everything. When my son make a crazy comment or say something, he the one that, sometimes we do get out. And I have to say, Jamila, he just 11 years old. Just let him off the hook. just let him off the hook. He just talking from the 11-year-old standpoint. Not from my 39-year-old understanding, because he should understand what I'm telling him, So I go through these, ways of being able to express myself, and I'm getting a lot better. And so with that, I'll keep coming back. Thanks for the show.